corn we run one combine, and the soybeans we run two combines.
Chris Murray is a farmer in Champaign County, Illinois. He's harvesting corn on a sunny October afternoon.
We're still probably going to be in our top five best soybean years we've ever had. Just last year was tremendous. We had a great growing season for soybeans and corn.
So good for soybeans, in fact, that farmers planted more acres of soybeans in the U.S. this year than ever before. But the land that Murray farms here in Illinois wasn't always used to grow those two crops.
Where I live, actually, landlord that originally bought that section bought it for duck hunting back in the late 1800s. So.
Murray says at the time, the landlord was probably unaware of corn and soybeans. But over the centuries, the land, like much of Illinois, has transformed.
We're in the heartland, and pretty much there's a reason why corn and soybean are king through this area.
So how did corn and soybeans become king in the Midwest? Corn has been popular here ever since the prairie was drained for crop growing by farmers. The soybean, on the other hand, a plant native to Asia, wasn't common at all among U.S. farmers until more recently. While soybeans are now closing in on corn for the most popular crop in the state, they were still somewhat unknown in the first half of the 20th century. This 1940 video is from a tractor company promoting uses for this new bean.
Soybeans have many uses on the farm, and chemists have found over 300 widely assorted commercial uses for this comparatively new crop.
In fact, a major reason the soybean took off in the Midwest, and now the U.S., is because of one businessman by the name of A.E. Staley.
It's very interesting to me, for example, as a museum person, to meet with children and find out that they don't know why we're the soybean capital of the world.
Laura Jarr is the director of the Staley Museum. It's inside a large Frank Lloyd Wright-style mansion in Decatur, where the soybean pioneer and his family lived. And while Decatur is now the soybean capital of the world, it was actually a beanless sort of place when Staley bought the house in 1912.
What is that movie, Field of Dreams, Kevin Costner? If you build it, they will come.
Who's hearing voices?
Ray is.
That's the 1989 film where an Iowa farmer hears a voice in a cornfield telling him to build a baseball diamond that draws the ghost of baseball legends.
I think I know what "if you build it, he will come" means.
Well, in that same spirit, Staley was saying, if you plant them, I will buy them. Then when he bought those beans, in order to make that a sustainable process for farmers and for himself, he needed to create a market for them.
Staley did just that. In 1909, he purchased a defunct corn processing plant in Decatur. By 1922, he added soybean processing, the first large American company to do so. That was still 2 years before the USDA was even tracking the crop. Staley had a background as a traveling salesman, and he convinced farmers that they should grow the bean. By the late 1920s, he even had a train to spread his message across the Midwest.
Staley partnered with the University of Illinois and the Illinois Central Railroad to create a train called the Soybean Special, the Soil and Soybean Special, actually.
The train had exhibits and presentations about possible uses for the soybean. It was a sort of attraction for small towns, and it told farmers that someone would buy these beans if they would grow them.
And that's what we can thank A.E. Staley for, having that vision and courage to step into something new and create something new.
Staley's impact on American agriculture can still be felt today. Soybeans are now a $40 billion industry in the U.S., a close second to the $51 billion corn industry. Carrie Schnicki is a professor who researches farm management at the University of Illinois. I spoke with him at his office in Urbana, which actually overlooks a cornfield in the heart of campus.
So if you look there, right next to it is the undergraduate library, which is four stories, I believe, underground. So we take corn and crops here seriously.
Schnitke says it was primarily the use of corn and soybeans for animal feed that made them so ubiquitous in the Midwest, and now other areas of the U.S.
Soybeans, you know, it's the protein, and until you find another protein source that compete with soybeans, those two crops are going to be the dominant two.
About 70% of soybeans are used for animal feed, but what are the downsides to growing mostly soybeans? Schnicki says that a lack of diversity is one.
if you have one crop that would have a blight or a disease that came to be largely impact that crop, you have the other crops to fall back on.
And there are other environmental concerns with the two-crop rotation of corn and soybeans. When all those fields sit empty after harvest, around this time of year, it makes it easier for soil erosion and runoff to occur. That's something Steve John with the Agricultural Watershed Institute, a nonprofit in Decatur, is working to address.
We're interested in trying to find ways to basically improve the environmental performance of agricultural landscapes.
John's hoping to get more farmers to turn just 10 to 15% of their land to perennial grasses. That can be used as bedding for animals or used to create what is known as biomass energy for heat. But that's still a long way off, and for farmers to do that, there has to be a market. So, to return to our original question, what would it take to get row crop farmers to grow less corn and soybeans? There are USDA programs for traditional commodity farmers hoping to diversify their operations, or farmers who are just starting out. Back on Chris Murray's farm, he explains that younger farmers are rare, and a big part of that is cost. A new combine for harvest can easily run up to $500,000.
So that's just for a combine, not a tractor or auger wagon or any kind of tillage equipment. So it's lots of times you're talking about $1.5 to $2 million worth of equipment.
It's all of these expenses combined with falling crop prices that are encouraging farmers to diversify their sources of income, whether on or off the farm. But for Murray and other farmers in the heartland, soybeans and corn are still where the demand is, partly because of the market that A.E. Staley helped create nearly a century ago. Until the next Staley comes along, or expenses guide the next generation of farmers away from corn and soybeans, the two crops will likely remain king here in the Midwest. For Illinois Public Media, I'm Anna Casey.